Heathens and hooligans, what's the story? Morning glory.
Spooky season's gone. It's gone, up and gone, man.
Sorry, so should I say winter slaves and elves and knaves? I don't know.
I don't understand the purpose of this intro line right now.
Is there ever a purpose to the intro line?
Well, I need more purpose than that.
Fine, I'll go all profesh. I'll go all profesh for you. Okay, hold on. I want to hear your reporter version. I more want someone to come back on screen because I'm seeing what they're prepping in the green room. And I'm just like, we just need this on the screen.
Y'all didn't say nothing about it being a red theme show. So
once again, if you guys are listening to this, we highly, highly recommend watching us on youtube.com/@FXA Media, because only there do you get to see very specific imagery that you're missing out right now. I'm not even going to describe it. I want you, if you're listening to this right now, I'm not even going to describe it to you. That's how unfair I'm going to be this week. I'm not even going to describe it to you, but you're missing out on a fantastic moment in Geektastic Cypher history. Like, this will... The best part is, I don't even think I'm going to make it the thumbnail for the episode, because I want it to be... I want it to be a surprise.
If anything, it should be that you've blurred him completely.
That's what I should do. That's a good idea. That's a great idea, Dave.
That's a good idea. Is my voice all stereo in this thing?
Yeah,
No, that's fine.
Okay, good.
You got to talk in the right voice though.
He doesn't have a voice.
Like, yeah, he has a deeper voice. He's always chill.
He doesn't have a deep voice. He talks black, like,
if he's represented on Malcolm X, I'm doing pretty good.
Bamboozled. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us.
Yeah, and I gotta, like, you know, be all concerned and then take my hand and, like, smash a book all crazy and then still look concerned. You remember that scene where he's just like, damn it, and then he
just back. Don't you know electricity and magnetism are related?
There's definitely a gif of Malcolm X smashing something. Hold on.
Oh my god, crazy times,
crazy week, tons of trailers. Tons of guys. I just rewatched Captain Marvel maybe 10 minutes before we started this in preparation for the Marvels this week.
Yeah, boy.
With the show or the movie?
The movie, the Marvels. Yeah.
Oh, okay, okay. No, I mean, which one did you rewatch is what I'm saying.
Captain Marvel. There is the movie. Okay. You're talking about Ms. Marvel, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, Ms. Marvel's the one with Kamala Khan. I actually only want to watch the finale of that one because that's where the crossover is. I rewatched the WandaVision episode where they do the whole Monica Rambeau going in and coming out, the fourth episode of that season. By the way, WandaVision, fantastic show. Can we still give it up for that show? Yeah. When we look back at how messed up the MCU has become, we have to acknowledge that is solid. We got Skinny sharing a Denzel as Malcolm meme,
but it's just so calm. It's just anger. It's just so calm.
It's explosive, random explosive moment.
That's how I feel about those MCU articles. Huh?
Yeah.
Another one.
But how excited are we really for the Marvels? Let's be serious. Do you think this Marvels has been hyped enough to be excited for?
I think it's being slept on enough to be an actual sleeper.
I think it's being slept on because the actors can't promote it whatsoever because of a strike. And I think that has more to do with it than anything.
I also forgot.
Would it be then the fact that the MCU is having all this trouble, not because stuff is meh, it's mostly because it's the stuff that happened with the pandemic and all that stuff. So they couldn't roll it out big like they used to. And then also on top of it, the screen actors and everything striking, so they can't go and promote like they usually do. They can't create the hype like they want to.
The strike only happened in the last year, and they didn't promote their projects. They didn't have any great projects in the time frame that the strike's been happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the other project? The Secret Invasion was earlier this year, and they did promote that. That didn't get affected by the strike.
Did they promote Quantumania and Volume 3 and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Quantumania, yeah, because everyone already... I remember the promotion for that because everyone already from the commercial was like, that better not be the CGI.
Yeah, and Guardians 3 got a full proper promotion with Gunn and Chris Pratt sitting together and then what's her name? Palm and who's what's British girl's name? Redhead that plays Nebula.
Oh, like, I know you're talking about, but I forgot her name. But
like they did all their groupings and they did all their promo together and they did all that stuff. And then and that's the thing. I really think that you do need those things for something. Marvel is popular, but Marvel isn't so popular that people pay attention to every film.
Yeah, you need everybody on Jimmy Kimmel.
Right. Right. You need
we own the station. We own Jimmy Kimmel. Put him on there.
And that's the thing. You need the
Good Morning America. We own all that.
You need the machine, especially when it's the type of stuff that they just constantly like review bomb and hate on. Like Brie Larson still gets hate and she never even did anything. Mm.
But isn't that why she gets hate? Because she didn't do anything?
What do you mean? Oh, yeah. I thought she did it. I watched Captain Marvel and I think she did a good job in that movie. Whether or not the story is bad, she acted well. She did a good performance.
That I would agree.
Yeah. So, and again, in Endgame, solid performance as much as she could have in that.
Wasn't she like, and again, I have a bad memory because, you know, I just thought, you know, it always felt like tabloidy to me that this news anyways, but, wasn't some of it also the fact that they claimed that she was difficult to work with in the actual media press tour?
No, yeah, so I think it was just some bits of when she was doing interviews. So I think the main one is the one with her, Chris Hemsworth, and what's his name? War Machine.
Don Cheadle?
Don Cheadle. And so I think what happened was I think Chris Hemsworth was trying to, you know, be a little bit being jokey and light.
Loose.
And she was more like, I don't know. It seemed like she was more dour or more confrontational. So I think there was like a bit of a back and forth between who's more stronger, Miss Marvel or Thor. And then there was a back and forth there. And then I think Chris Hemsworth was trying to give praise to all the stunt people. But then for some reason, Brie didn't pick up on what he was trying to do. Like, you know, hey, these guys don't get a lot of shine. And she was like, well, I did all my own stunts. So I think a lot of people just assumed that's how she was throughout the whole process of everything instead of just gleaming onto one thing.
And that was them looking for an excuse to be mad at her because that was even after Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Because that was when they're doing press for Endgame.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, like, if she was so difficult to work with, then why would she later direct a movie and have
Samuel Jackson
in it? So that doesn't make any sense. If someone's difficult to work with, then
I think that's self-explanatory, that last part. But like, those casting shade are not her fellow actors. You know what I mean? Like, it's more like management. That's what I got out of it.
Right, but that's what Jaws is saying. Still valid. If you're saying she's hard to work with, but
would they allow him to work with her?
The movie she worked on, like it was a movie she was directing, so she was doing, and you know, after doing Captain Marvel, you know, with Samuel Jackson, she did another movie with Samuel Jackson. So
that's what we're saying. Yeah. Why would he work with her again if she was difficult to work
with? But that's the thing. My comment about difficult to work with, I didn't mean that like through a between actors thing. I'm talking about, I feel like management, I thought she was having problems with Disney. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, like
I've never heard her having problems with Disney.
That's what I thought the rumor was.
No, the only thing I've heard is that a bunch of neckbeards got mad because she said early on that not every movie is for you, neckbeards. Get over yourselves. Some of these movies are going to be from different perspectives and have different points and be more focused on women or people of color, and you neckbeards need to shut the up. And then the neckbeards went, she doesn't want to do press interviews with men. And then you find out that it was never that she didn't want to do press interviews with men. She just said, all the press interviews I do seem to be with men. It'd be nice if I saw more people that look like me, which makes perfect sense. Because even black actors say all the time, everyone that gets sent to all these press junkets are always just white folks doing the press junkets.
Black people don't have jobs in press like that.
And that in of itself is a bigger conversation. And that's the small point she was trying to make. And the neckbeards went like big old crybabies who didn't get a bottle that night. Like, it was ridiculous. And then they started review bombing her movie. And then the movie still made a billy. So yeah,
I remember I was having a discussion with some friends about it. And I think some people were complaining about, I guess, the part where she takes the clothes from the dude on the bike. I was like, how is that any different from any Terminator movie? I'm confused.
Also,
I'm honestly confused.
Are they talking about the fact that she took the bike? Because she doesn't even take his clothes. She takes the clothes off of a mannequin.
Oh, she took his bike. Okay. But yeah, but she just took the dude's bike, right? And they were like, that's so ridiculous. I'm like, but
didn't
like, Arnold does that in every movie?
A lot of people do that in movies. Like in all sorts of movies.
Every movie. Any other movie with a cop. I need to take your car. Right. Blue Streak was the best one because he yells at the woman in the car, the black woman in the car, and she smacks the shit out of him. At least you can ask nicely. And then she's driving them to where they need to go in the next scene.
Yeah, that's proper.
Dude.
I remember seeing a cartoon where the person's like, I'm going to beat this person up, tape their clothes. And like the next scene is them losing the fight. Like, I think that was Family Guy. Like, yes, that's how it would go sometimes. So you're like, I'm going to take his uniform. No, you're not.
Yeah, you're mad cocky. Are you sure you think
the minute someone tries to take my, hey, I need your uniform, I'm on the floor and I'm kicking up. I don't give a fuck. I'm doing that UFC kick you in the jaw shit like that. You're not taking these pants.
that might have to be the title. You're not taking these pants, because that's pretty great. No, but that's it. Like, I rewatched the movie because I was just like, I'm seeing the Marvels on Friday opening day, because I like seeing these movies opening day or opening weekend just to see, like, is it going to be worth it? What are the expectations? The movie is not on track to make as much as the previous one. Obviously, I don't even think it's on track to be one of the best Marvel movies in a minute. But I also think very, very much, and I know some people are going to say it's not a fair asterisk to put on, but I genuinely think having an actor strike where you can't get Kamala Khan, the actress who plays Kamala Khan, who is one of the biggest diehard Marvel fans and could go toe-to-toe with any Marvel fan on trivia. Like, they've tested her, and she's come through victorious multiple times.
Battle-tested.
If you don't have someone like that dedicated to these
comic book shops.
Yo, she's not playing. It's awesome.
If I were to be an actor, I'd be like, if I was an actor and in this current state, my only mission in life would be to be like, I want to get a job on a Marvel movie and just talk geeky on every single, like, I'd go to Disney. I'd be like, put me on the nerd shit.
Dude.
Put me on the fucking nerd shit. I'll go toe-to-toe or I'll represent properly even if I fail. Like, go.
And that's the thing. Like, she is that kind of a fan and would do the junket like hard, and because she's Gen Z and Gen Z doesn't go to the movies in the same way the older generations do, you need her kind of in the forefront being like, yo, come see the movie, come check it out, we're doing this, it's great, it's gonna be fun, blah blah blah. And you don't get that. And I like even just that Gen Z loss of her not being able to promote, because Brie Larson and Monica, like, they're not going to be doing. Is it Tiana Parrish? They're not going to be doing the same kind of promo.
No,
and that's the unfortunate thing. So, I don't know. I don't know what to say, man. I don't know. I don't know what to tell y'all.
I don't know.
Such is life.
But if we're gonna talk about dope nostalgia, and speaking of movies set in the 80s.
Oh, it's not set in the 80s.
Well, I would say, though, that trailer is subtly trying to give you a sense of throwback.
Yeah, for sure,
It's only when you see the cell phone in the girl's hand on the beach.
I mean...
I'll pull it up.
When you see the OGs, they don't look like they're from
the 80s. No. I'm talking about the first 15 seconds
Where
the cars they use aren't 2023 cars.
Okay.
All the cars in it were like the taxis they were showing were old New York taxis. I'm like, yo, they don't even run those taxis in New York anymore. What are you showing?
That's movies. That's they always do that. Oh yeah, sure. This movie takes place in the 80s. All these cars are from the 70s.
But I'm just saying, I'm watching that trailer, and for the first 15 seconds, I'm just like, is this a throwback? Are they trying to tell us? And then I saw the girl on the beach with the phone in her hand, and I was like, oh, no. Then homeboy on the Ferris wheels with his phone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. But how, like, Jaws.
Yeah.
How many trailers set in the 2000s and the 2010s or the 2020s have kids at a fire hydrant with a can spraying water?
They don't let you do that no more.
That's not a thing anymore. I mean,
the only reason we would know that because we know that, like, that's, you know, but they're trying to invoke this is New York.
Yes.
So that's it. But it was, I mean, like, they're only trying to say, like, look, it's New York, all these Hallmark things of New York when you think,
but it was very clear that it was New York at a specific era that they were trying to give us. And then they lean into, but now
they're trying to say New York is very hot. So when people think of New York being hot, they're like, oh yeah, we're doing this with the hydrants. I don't even think you'd be able to do that nowadays.
Are you trying to tell me you didn't think they were trying to imitate the 80s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay. What you're doing. Fine. You're right. Yeah. Okay. I see what you're doing.
That's the whole thing. That's all I'm saying. They're trying to give us a sense of the 80s at the top of the trailer. And I thought that was really cool because I was like, oh, this is a throwback that you're doing. Even to the point where you had me second guessing myself for a second, like, is this movie going to be like time travel? Like, there's going to be some weird, because, you know, I wouldn't put it past them now that we've had a literal ghost help out in the last movie.
Oh yeah, yeah.
If you're gonna be like,
always unclear about like how ghosts work. I mean, not work, but if they're good, they're bad, they're mischievous, they're neutral, they're like, you know, it's always weird with Ghostbusters. Oops, I said the name of the movie.
Ghostbusters: Frozen Empire, coming out spring 2024.
Yeah, after the Frozen Empire has gone, or he might be sticking around. We don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Groundhog might be like, "Yo, it's still cold," or "I'm dead," still cold. Or "I'm dead."
That'd be funny if they had a so
remember?
Sad.
You remember
yes,
that?
Yes. Jaws is making a reference to. Do you want to tell the story? Because I feel like
I can't remember the name of the groundhog, but I think it was the groundhog for Quebec.
It was the
groundhog for Quebec last year, right?
Yeah,
Groundhog's Day. Our groundhog passed away, so he did not come out of his hole, did not see his shadow. They're like, hey, he's taking forever to get out of that hole. They went and go get an
and he was dead, and then they had a kid pop out of the hole. As if that wasn't weird enough.
What?
Yeah, they had a kid pop out.
I do not remember that.
Look it up. Look it up, man. We had a child
pop out. We tried. We had to call an audible, and it was really weird and bad.
Very weird. Very weird.
And then the kid had to see its shadow?
The kid did whatever the kid... I don't even know what they did. They just had this kid pop out and act like this kid knew what was up. Very odd behavior. Quebec was just scrambling because they're just like, well, we can't just not have anything. It's just like, you could have had nothing.
You could have made a memorial.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, like that would have been like the memorial. If it was a good, if it was a sad, if it was a bad day, it'd be like, oh, well, we're gonna have a. He's letting us know on his way out of bad news. If it's a beautiful day, like he's giving us one glimmer of hope that it'd be good, you know, good weather coming. But no,
instead, funny. But yeah, so I mean, I'm excited for this movie. Ghostbusters continues to be a franchise that you can. You could just keep making movies. I think you got to be mindful not to saturate, but they've been pretty good. The last one was what, 2 years ago?
I think so.
I think 2 years ago. Oh, more than two? Not 2021? Let me check.
Oh, before that, maybe.
Yeah, I think it was like first year of, I think it was one of the things we got to see via
2021.
Oh, really?
Ghostbusters Afterlife.
I thought it was in more pandemic-y time, early pandemic-y times. But yeah, the only thing I thought was not disappointing or anything about the trailer, like I'm happy to see them, but like at the same time, I'm like, I was hoping to see a bit more of a transition, was in the trailer, they show you that, you know, it's like all the guys are coming back, you know, Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray and all that. And me, I'm like, it's nice to see you, but I was hoping to see,
Paul Rudd?
No.
The kids?
The black guy.
Winston?
Winston, thank you.
They left out Winston again?
No, Winston's in the movie, but the last movie made it insinuated that Winston was going to come and
like start like things
start off. A new yeah. one, and there was going to be like a progression, and I was like, that seems cool, it's a nice cut, we got it was yeah. all super respectful, and now I'm like around. You have to do that again now, because you're not going to tell me that it's you. I say with respect, all of them are also a little too old to a certain degree, like it's not believable, like I agree you're fighting ghosts, there's yeah. not like a strength thing, but like, you know,
I mean, those ghosts threw them around, so.
Yeah, like, you know, you're not supposed to spry. I don't believe that you're spry enough to take on ghosts.
That's yeah. funny. You know what, I totally get what you're saying. I equally at the beginning of this trailer was just like, okay, especially because the trailer starts off, you see all the ice coming across, you get to the firehouse is there, you see the ice hit the firehouse, and I expected them to open it up and Ernie was going to be there like working with the new generation people.
Yeah. But instead you see, because I'm just getting to that part in the trailer.
Yes. Instead you start to see like all the Ghostbusters are there. Yeah, and it's yeah. just like Dan Aykroyd.
I do kind of feel like they are kind of focusing on the newer people, because there's yes. that scene where you see them.
I wasn't all the saying new they kids. Weren't. No, I wasn't saying they weren't. Yeah, I was just saying I expected Ernie to be the focal point of, because if he has the firehouse and he's bringing them back to work in New York, I kind of expected, instead of Dan Aykroyd being in scenes talking to the youngins, I expected to see Ernie doing that. Because I like Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray were the stars of the previous ones. Ernie constantly referred, like Ernie Hudson has mentioned multiple times how he was originally supposed to be a part of it and then only showed up in page 36.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give the man his due. Let him carry the torch with these new kids.
So I guess this one's kind of being like, I mean, if suppose they're just showing this just to be like, hey, we got Dan Aykroyd, we got Bill Murray, blah, blah, blah. Maybe the actual plot is, it could be that. And it's more like Extreme Ghostbusters, where Egon was like the focal point and bringing in the new people and stuff like that.
Right. I mean, that's the vibe I'm getting. I don't think
that. I mean, it is a trailer, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, we're not supposed to judge a book by its cover, but I'm a judge a little bit because.
Well, I'm judging.
That's
not a
job. you're giving me some sense of what this movie is going
to
be.
Hey, Paul Rudd, give a franchise to somebody else, you bitch ass. Like, what are you doing?
Oh, really?
Paul, get out of here, man.
Why are you talking?
Paul,
I'm not dissing Paul, man. Like, Paul,
there's Patton Oswalt. There's Kumail Nanjiani. Come on,
a lot of people.
Kumail Nanjiani, he can still rock. He can still rock because he hasn't been in everything. Paul Rudd's out here being fit. Like, come on, Paul.
And Kumail looks old. Like they salt and peppered him up a lot.
Yeah, they have to do that for Paul, ageless man.
Sheesh. Are you talking about the fact that Paul Rudd was in Only Murders in the Building recently?
There's that. No? There's.
Spoiler. No, I'm joking.
Paul Rudd was in This Is 40 when he was 40. Okay. Like, Paul Rudd needs to chill.
Hey, man. You do one Super Nintendo commercial and then you rule the world.
Man, Paul Rudd. I mean, okay.
The young old guy makes out with Alicia Silverstone at the end of Clueless, which was 1994.
Yeah.
And then out turn around and be Ant-Man three times over. What are you doing? And he's gonna catch another franchise too. He's in Ghostbusters, so this is the second Ghostbusters. You know they're gonna do like 3, 4. I swear, if he's in like some kind of mask or Transformers, or if he shows up in Transformers,
he's gonna be the leader of Mask.
Hey, you
just jinxed it right now. That's
happening. Dave, right there.
It's on you.
Please, God, don't make him Tracker. No,
I don't think you want
leader of Mask.
Tracker's a bad dad. I don't think he wants to do that. That's the running gag.
He plays a bad dad pretty well.
Because that Matt Tracker's a terrible father.
I mean, he's a pretty bad dad in 40-year-old.
There you go. Really,
doesn't he complain about his kids every 2 seconds? Like,
I think that's every parent, and they just don't tell. Don't tell you. Like, oh man, I love my kids. God,
you're just telling us that they're all bad parents. You're not changing the point.
No, I'm saying in reality, I think I'm fairly certain our parents would be like, oh my god, our children are they're so annoying. Oh my god!
2 years deep, and I'm telling you right now, I ain't got nothing.
I don't know,
to
man.
About, really,
I'm talking about if you look at not just 40-year-old virgin, but Knocked Up, where the character is introduced, he is full on talking about how he wishes he didn't have those kids. We're talking about a completely different energy. It's one thing to be like, my kids are annoying. It's another thing to be like, I need to get out of this house. These kids need to.
But he never does. There's the fact of saying it. and then there's a fact of doing it, and there's a plot. Hard, there's a bunch, I'm sure there's a bunch of movies and all that stuff where men are terrible and they actually do it, and the story's more about how crappy that dad is, but that guy is still there.
He leads the life literally that I'm heading towards. So I may be, you know what I mean? Like, hey, hey.
I'm not saying he's winning Father of the Year. I'm just saying he dare.
I'll ask you this. Would you rather be with someone that doesn't want to be with you, or would you rather they just leave?
Been there, done that.
I ain't got time for that.
Exactly.
They could. I would rather they leave at any given moment, but they were just like, "No, I got to make this guy feel miserable. Why? Right. Why? I tried to break up with you. Why? Why are you telling me to keep me here? And then you're gonna act bad again. Why?"
I feel like Joss is working through something completely different. This is
I was about to be like, bro.
Joss is working through some stuff right now, folks. Hey, man, you're in. You went through the fire to get to
That's what I'm saying.
That's where you're at. And Paul Rudd, saying, hopefully
he's average dad. That's what below average. He's still below. There. Quite a bit. He's still showing up. He's still making care. Make sure the kids ain't dead.
He's bare minimum dad. He's bare minimum dad. So yeah, Ghostbusters, people, go check it out. We got Shogun.
Shogun
trailer.
James Clavell's Shogun, amazing novel, very long, but it is a modern novel. It's a very good read. It's actually a good read. It's not Lord of the Rings where you're like, oh my goodness, get to the point.
What's the other one? It's like Dune is like that too, right? People always say Dune is so long and heavy. Like
Dune is heavy, but again, it's like a modern, like it's, I think it was written in this, I want to say 70s, if I remember right. It came like the novel is?
Or
Dune, I think came out in the 70s.
Okay. When was Shogun written?
I want to say 80s, but it could be late 70s. Okay. And so I know that with this movie is a remake, or maybe it's based off of a novel by James Clavell, and then they made in the 1980s they made a miniseries. I think NBC made a miniseries off the novelization, and it was like one of the most expensive miniseries ever made because they actually filmed it in Japan. They got all these Japanese actors to be in it and everything. So it's about, hold on a second. It's about an Englishman that's like a pilot for a ship crashes at Japan and they get taken in. And so it's them kind of, well, it's, they're taking this Englishman and showing him how to be Japanese and the court and everything like that. And like, he slowly kind of comes around and starts understanding how Japan is and everything. But as it starts off, they're always like, "Ugh, this dirty gaijin." This barbarian, look at him, he can't even shave his face, look at this dude, what is he even doing? So, you know, definitely fish out of water. You know, it's like one of the, not, I wouldn't say one of the first, but it's like, you know, one of the big cultural touchstones of like fish out of water, right, in this place called Japan that we don't know about. It is actually really good. I actually read through the whole novel, it was really good, and I haven't seen the miniseries. I want to see the miniseries. Gonna buy that on Blu-ray as soon as possible. So I'm really excited for this. A lot of good people in it. And
Hulu. So
can't wait.
It'll be interesting. FX has hit a lot of home runs. I don't know if people have had a chance to check out, like, the, if you have Disney Plus, the Star catalog, a lot of that stuff is FX Hulu content that is Star originals over here. And some of that stuff is really, really solid. So a show that I talked about in the past that I think people should check out, Devs, is another like FX original, Hulu original type thing. They just put out quality, so I look forward to it. And if this book is as good as you say, I mean, it's only just quality content meets quality production, then that to me just screams success. They just have to follow and tell a solid story.
You can't do this in a movie. You gotta, it's gotta breathe. It's definitely gotta breathe.
And it's good that people are doing that stuff now. You know, like, I think we've gotten back to the point, because I know when we were kids, you used to be able to do miniseries like this. And then there was a long period of time where doing a miniseries just wasn't cool. None of the networks were doing them. It wasn't a thing. You didn't do like a mini, like you didn't do like a soft launch movie to launch a TV show. All that stuff got scrapped. And it was just like pilot, failed season, next. And, you know, I feel like...
I think you kind of only really started getting that again when they started doing, what was it? Like, I think they were doing like biopics of like hip hop and R&B people. Mm. And then you really kind of got it with the new edition miniseries, okay, where they made it a big deal. And everyone's like, oh, you know, I got to go watch it. And everyone's like seeing who this person is, who that person is.
Oh, yeah, like, the casting was a big deal. I remember that.
The casting was a big deal. And then also the same fact of like, oh, look who's playing Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis and all these other people and all that, you know, so it was pretty cool. And they're recreating a lot of like famous like music videos and stuff like that. So that was also cool, too.
Yeah, that's always fun to watch, at least when they get the rights to the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got it. Doesn't make sense. We're going to do a new edition and no Sunny, none of that. No, dude, no. Can You Stand the Rain?
Did you ever see the Aaliyah one where they didn't have the rights to the music?
Yeah, because her uncle is just like holding it with a tight fist. I know. Only now we get everything on streaming now.
But that honestly, that doc was painful to watch. Painful to watch. So yeah, I appreciate when the music and the casting can be solid. And again, Shogun, we look forward to it. Speaking of reboots and things, throwbacks, The Fall Guy. I didn't know that this was a Lee Majors original series that they're remaking with Ryan Gosling. Did not know that.
I thought it was a movie.
It is a movie, but they're remaking they're taking the plot from the TV show. Like when they did the A-Team movie, for example.
Right.
Like it's just, they're taking an old 80s.
Oh, I had no idea this was based on an 80s.
I know. I didn't know either. It's my buddy who watches the show all the time. Was just like, man, I used to watch the show back in the day. And I was like, what show? He sent me the link to the IMDb. Lee Majors, right after $6 Million Man, made this TV show. It ran for like 5-6 years. Really popular. Lee Majors sings the theme song and everything. It's about a stuntman and all that jazz. Exact same plot. That's what they're remaking here. We got Gosling starring. Winston Duke is in it. And what's her name? Oh my God! Why am I drawing a blank on our lead?
Emma. Movie? Blunt.
Blunt. Yes.
Emily.
Emily Blunt. There we go.
Tim. What's his name?
John Krasinski's wife.
Jim's wife. Jim's real wife.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I actually really want to watch at least one or two episodes from the original series now, just to see what this show was about. But my buddy says it was one of his favorite shows. The action was always so good. And I imagine this is like, the original was based on a stuntman in the 80s before stunt got all serious about the safety measures. We're talking.
I need to just ride into this car. I need to drive this car into this wall,
dude. I will never forget Brooke Shields talking about a stunt they made her do when she was a child actor, 17. They put this girl in the stunt car with the stunt driver, and she's just like, "So what do I do?" He's just like, "Put on your seatbelt." And then they just crashed this car with Brooke Shields in it. And I'm like, what are you talking about? What is she
that's
saying?
That's fucked up.
That's how they did stunts back then. They're just like, yeah, the actor's got to be like, you obviously don't do that shit anymore, but full on.
Especially kids. So remember, they only changed the law after those two kids and the actor died during the Twilight Zone movie.
Jesus.
The helicopter.
That shit. That's the crazy shit where you like find out what had to happen before laws had to be made. You know what I mean? Like,
that's not cool.
I know, but I'm just,
that aside, that movie does look really good.
I mean, it does. And that's why, like,
it looked good before you told me it was based off of a popular whatever, you know, like, it looked good.
I also watched a trailer without knowing that, had no clue, watched it, loved it, thought it was super interesting. My buddy hits me and tells me blah, 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 blah. I'm like, dude, are you serious? This sounds fantastic. He's like, yeah, man, this is an old school IP. My only complaint, as I always say, please give me new, but I'll take this and see if you can turn it into something, because this is IP that I don't think anyone even remembers. Like,
I always hear about Million Dollar Man. I always hear about people with their Million Dollar Man action figures and the dolls and the play set. Remember that episode he was with Sasquatch, and they always reference that. And so I just don't.
The fact that he did another show for 5 years afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
Crazy. I'm guessing the $6 million man was so much more popular that it outshines the fact that he did another show right after.
I think
probably one of those shows that, as like fans at the time were like, oh, well, we can't do this anymore. But if you still want to see this
right,
actor do crazy shit, this is a way to see it. That's probably what it was.
Yeah. Know? I'm sure it was very much they wanted to do something in the vein, and this was what they did.
It's like the Angel being on Buffy and like, well, you don't want to get arrested, so we can make Angel. Like, there you go.
Yes. And I it would have been cool if they had been able to do that, where like the $6 million man becomes a stuntman. Because I don't know about you, but that seems like the perfect use of a $6 million bionic human being. Stunt? He can't die. What are you talking about? Perfect.
The nerds were like, in their minds, like, he's retired. He never, I don't know if the ending of the show is like him being destroyed or something. Yeah, but if not, this is like his life afterwards.
Yeah, full on headcanon. People are just like, this is the same character.
Yeah.
We got another one, Good Burger 2. I can't believe we're getting this. It took forever. I'm still in shock that people wanted this as bad as they did, but I also get it because the nostalgia of this, but it's also just so wild to me. I was just like, wait, what? They're really doing it. Kenan, like when Skinny talks about people needing to give other people a chance, Kenan, I love you. You've been on SNL since the dawn of time. You've been on TV since you were a baby. This is wild, sir. I respect that you are just holding on. Like, you are not getting off the TV. You will go down in... I imagine he will go down in history as someone who's been on TV the most. Like, other than late night hosts, when you start to think of, like, people who've been on cam, on screen the most, I think Kenan's up there. I'm wondering what the record is, but... Kenan's inching up.
I think he broke the record for SNL for longest cast member already.
He did. Yeah. Daryl Hammond used to hold it, and he beat Daryl a good couple years ago. And he is setting such a long record that I don't see anyone else ever trying to beat it. Because it's also he's been on SNL for an era where he was able to transition between different groups.
Yeah.
Like you had like specific eras of SNL, and he's been able to be important in each era, and now he's just like an elder statesman that is still able to do it, is still funny. There's no reason for him not to be doing it. So
I think he found his groove,
right,
as being a game show host, a talk show host within those skits. I think he has his nice little groove in there.
Oh, often the straight man.
Yeah.
For like something when someone's acting a little wild. And I say all of that because that is when I thought, why do you want to do Good Burger 2? But I think it's just when you
Didn't want to do Good Burger. It's I don't know, the impression that everyone had gotten prior to everything is that it seemed like he was trying his best to not do Good Burger, and didn't seem like him and Kel were really cool or anything like that. I don't know. Like, it seemed like he just didn't want to. I don't know. It just, that was the impression everyone got. But, you know, they're finally getting to do it.
Yeah.
Good Burger 2.
Yeah.
Hope it's good.
Kenan and Kel back together, baby. So if you guys
seems to be what everyone fears. We're going to be replaced by robots.
Oh, yeah. I mean, guys,
they want to make Good Burger expand and branch out, and then they're replacing everybody with what's the name of the character that Kel plays?
I actually never remember his name. Hold on, let me look it up.
They're replacing with robots of him, and he's just basically doing everything.
Welcome to Good Burger. Like, I love the way he talks. That's the other thing.
Burnt out surfer dude.
Yeah, like it's just so good. So he plays Ed.
Ed, yeah. So they're replacing him, placing everybody. So they fire everybody that works at Good Burger and replacing them with robots.
Right.
And the robots are Ed, basically Ed. But it seems like also the premise is that Kenan's character got fired from his job and he needs to, you know, get back on his feet. Yeah. So he ends up working at Good Burger again.
Yeah. Well, I feel like that's a common trope in TV shows or in movies where they're trying to figure out, how do you bring back the character that was the successful one?
Or the straight man.
Yeah, because the straight man isn't gonna do the silly thing forever. He would definitely have moved on. So he loses his job because it's Party Down. In Party Down, Adam Scott's character comes back because he's a teacher, he's moved on, he's no longer acting, but then he gets divorced and he needs extra money, so he goes back to catering.
Right.
Same thing with this, where it's just like, you lose your job, you need a little extra money. Good Burger's always been there for you. It's an easy, quick job that you don't even have to Like, you barely even have to fill out a resume. You know how to do the job. Mm-hmm. You'll make enough money. You get back in.
So you have it on your resume already. Haven't changed since then because it's still efficient on how we do it. and you can manage with the stress of it going on.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, folks, if you are big fans, I'm thinking of someone specific when I say this. You've wanted this to my buddy. You've wanted this, you weirdo. So Monkey's go and paw. Play. Yeah.
All the wishes.
And then last but not least, we have the family plan, which my buddy says reminds him of the movie Nobody, but with a family. Mm. And
I think for me, I got excited just because of Latif Crawford was in the opening part of the trailer. So he's like the first assassin to get killed. And for those who don't know, Latif Crawford is a stuntman actor. He was in Tekken. He plays Eddie Gordo, capoeira guy from Tom Yong Gung / The Protector with Tony Jaa. So anytime I see him in anything, I'm super pumped to see him. Baraka in the Mortal Kombat.
His most recent and probably the biggest role, he plays the Mandalorian. He's the guy in the suit, one of the two in the suit. When Pedro Pascal's not in there doing his whole deep voiced tone thing, it's Lakeith. Lateef is kicking ass in the... That is so cool that he's getting to play that role. He gets to carry around the little Yoda baby. I am so jealous of this man's career. Can you imagine being like this next level martial arts capoeira? You've done all these great movies, but then also Star Wars hires you to travel around and be space dad to one of the most famous like dolls ever made by the franchise, Baby Yoda. Man, that's such an awesome little gig. But shout out to him, man. And then, you know, Mark Wahlberg, whatever. Y'all know how I feel. I won't say nothing.
AM3.
I won't say nothing. I'll be good. I'll be good for once. All I'll say is Eric Clapton and Mark Wahlberg can fuck themselves. That's it. That's all I'm going to say. I feel like that's fair.
All right.
Dave.
I got nothing. I know I'm not putting any.
TV shows. You've been watching.
I was worried that there was some type of indirect setup that I'm not going to
ask you to make comments on anyone. If anything, I would only do that if we were talking about Dan Harmon, because then I would do it just to bug you. Did you watch the last episode of?
No, I'm an episode behind.
I gotta say, buddy, last episode, not that bad.
Just becoming the converted. So now we know what the real problem that Brian had.
I will never be converted.
I just wanted to say one last thing about Latif. If you look up on YouTube, Larry Leung, Zero Gravity, it was a Zero Gravity stunt team. You'll find a movie called Damn 3. Look at it. That's Latif working in 2003.
All right. Okay. So he's been doing this a minute.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's almost like he's invincible. Just like, you know, how Invincible started this week. Eh? Did I do it? Did I do it? I just had to say that because of Brian's face that he's giving me on the show.
You know what? As much as I didn't love it, technically it's good. it's like when someone hits an in-ground home run. You're just like, I mean, is that a home run? But you know what? We got them points. So you do you, homie. Respect. My apologies for groaning.
But you know what? How your reaction is kind of my reaction to this episode.
Oh, damn!
Because of the fact although I'm very happy that it came back, and you know, it was very good to see it back.
Yeah,
this episode did not feel like it should have been the first episode of the season. This feels like you need a lull episode, a few episodes in, and that's what this is. Because
okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
so like. Did you guys see it?
I watched it, yes.
Okay. Draws, do you care if I say anything?
Go ahead. Real quick, for those of you who haven't watched Invincible, this is season two. We finished the first season arc, ends with like the comic book kind of major arc. Omni-Man has kicked his son's ass and leaves the planet. And now we are dealing with the aftermath of and the repercussions of what happened. So you have Mark, who is now trying to find his way and trying to feel balanced in this world where his father turned out to be a completely different person than he expected. His mother's dealing with the loss of who she loved and being and understanding that she's been mistreated this whole time. Mm-hmm. Or no, not that she was mistreated, but
treated
that she
like a pet.
Yeah, she was thought of as a pet, which is very unfortunate. And I can imagine very hurtful for someone.
Devastating
to hear that someone who that you thought you were in love with thought of you as a pet. And then also, you know, the secret military organizations that are now hesitant to work with Mark, or if anything, they want to, but want to figure out a way to control Mark because they are concerned he is like his father.
Exactly.
And but, I will say I did like
Cecil, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah.
I will say though, I did like the opening alternate reality thing we got.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. So like, they grab you right away,
right?
And you're like, okay, cool. So there's because right away you kind of realize like, well, no, unless this is the future, this is obviously an alternate reality, and there's got to be something going on.
It was well played though, because I wasn't sure at first.
Yeah, and then like you end up finding out that the intro is an alternate reality, and that one person gained powers on Earth who has the ability to shift himself through parallel universes and whatnot. And he's making some plan to try and do good by
Angstrom Levy, by the way, for those of you who've read the comic.
Yeah. Cause I didn't read the comic. So I was blanking.
Okay. I read the comic, so I'm okay with.
Yeah.
So, you know, the thing is that he's going in and trying to grab all the copies of him so that he could ultimately download all their memories to try and then save all the universes, because he knows like half the universes survive because Mark is not evil. And then there's the other half where he is evil or dies or something happens that, you know, it's not the same outcome. Right.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, this seems like it might lead somewhere. But then when it's ultimately like, well, I'm going to fuck over my own experiment. And then, you know, I'm clearly making myself a bad guy. A delusional bad guy, which I'm not like, to be quite honest, I looked at him like, this doesn't seem like it would be even that bad for Mark to beat. But like having that like very random really felt like it went nowhere, especially with how it ended. And obviously, like, you know, you created a bad guy, but like, again, this episode was something I felt like is like more that side story was more lull, because you had to have something I find a bit more.
Yeah.
Entertaining, because the other side was dark. It was Mark, you know, having PTSD, basically.
Yeah. You know what? It's as someone who's read the comic and is watching the show, because I know what's going to happen, it didn't bother me that the story, the like beats of the episode were slower. But I could understand that if you didn't know where this was going, it is very slow paced for a premiere, for a season, like,
yeah,
because as a premiere, you're like, you have to do so much table setting. Like in the comic book, you're just waiting week to week for the story. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you get introduced to this character, some stuff happens, you get into the story, the Maulers show up, you know, things continue. You know, I would say the C plot of the episode where the Guardians of the Globe are trying to establish their new team and trying to figure out their cohesiveness. That's like that is a bigger story in the comic book that feels like it has more weight. So the episodes, like the story doesn't feel as slow when you're reading the comic book, because the panels in the comic book are like teams fighting and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you'll cut to Angston and the Maulers doing something over here. And then Mark is like over there, but then you go back to this major fight with the Guardians and them trying to figure out who's going to lead. And you know, what's her name? The girl that's like helping Robot. It's kind of like, you understand, like they're kind of playing up their relationship a bit in the comic book, because, you know, spoilers for people, but there's like a major story with Robot and that girl that comes into play. So you start to get like a bunch of stuff that's growing, but in a TV show, I see what you're saying, because it's hard to build those in 30 minutes and make it interesting.
And if anything, I would have been like, make the whoever this, I forget what was the name of the bad guy that was made again,
Angstrom Levy.
So you make Angstrom Levy's story arc go through like, let's say, two episodes. And if you, like, example, if this episode would have had a bit more oomph on the team up of like seeing, like, because like the actual team, the Guardians of the Globe, they're actually like they're an entertaining team to watch. We've seen them in other episodes. You know, you could have, I think if you would have pivoted to put a bit more emphasis on them, where you could have also maybe made more light moments, so to speak, like, or more like catching eye moments, as opposed to like something, again, just maybe a bit too slow paced for the first episode. Mm-hmm. But mind you, if this is an episode where, well, it's going to be like this, but the rest of the season is running, then it's like, okay, whatever. But it's like, I was there. I'm like, I wish they would have done what they did in the first season. Give me, if you're going to do that, give me three episodes to start with.
Yes, I agree with you.
Give me three episodes.
I think that's the mistake. I think not giving more episodes gave you a sense of like, this is really slow paced. And then it just ends and you're like, you want me to wait a week for that? That was too slow.
Yeah. And at the same time, like, if you remember the first season, like, and ironically, I would say, if anything, the table setting at the beginning was the only slow part of that season, which, again, you saw three episodes right away.
Yeah.
And the end of the first episode was really jaw-dropping, because at the end of the first episode, if I'm not mistaken, was when you find out, like, the team was killed by Omni-Man. And you're like, Well, what the fuck is that? Like even that as the first episode for the first season, you're like, well, like, there's an insta, like, what the fuck, or an insta, like,
yeah,
you've clawed me in immediately.
Right.
My motivation for the next episode is more like, well, not that that was a bad episode, but fuck this, I want to see something more impactful. Like, you know, I want to see the next episode because this one didn't satisfy.
Right. How did you feel about the Alan ending, though, when Alan shows up and you start to get information about, like, oh, hey, there's like a group out here in space that is worried about the Vulture Mites. Like, did that help add any, like,
well, I
enthusiasm,
like,
to watching it or excitement?
Well, I'm not, like, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it was a complete shit. Like, I want to make it clear. I'm not saying it was a bad episode. I'm just saying I was surprised it was the first episode of the season.
Right.
Like, you know, like, I do find, like, the information and the facts, like, you know, you had stuff there. But like I said, it was one of those episodes that, like, I thought you'd get me running two or three episodes. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, you need a break, because just like the first season, it was like information overload. You give me this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I almost think, yeah, I think you're making a very valid point. Either they should have done it in three, they should have given us two to three episodes to start us off. Mm-hmm. Or they should have figured out how to pace the story a little bit better, because I do agree. Thinking about the fact that as a comic book reader, I know what's coming, so I'm okay with the pacing, because I'm like, oh, I'm already there. You've already sold me. You guys are doing a animated version of something that I really enjoyed, and I just want to see it made. You know, mm-hmm. We always talk about use the storyboard to make the movie. This is them using the storyboard to pretty much make the show. They're making a few tweaks here and there, but ultimately he's staying really true to the comic book. If anything, he's like building on the comic book in some ways, which I heard him say in an interview he's going to do, which was really cool.
Yeah. And for me, it's just like, you know, example, if I were to put myself in your shoes, then I could see where there's the excitement, because you're going more, instead of being like, what's this, what's happening?
Yes,
you're kind of like, ooh, I can't wait for the next, like, you know, which is like, don't get me wrong, we always say that sometimes there has to be episodes that are fan service and stuff, like, right?
For sure. But this not just the first one of the season.
We've done a lot of reviews of a lot of things. Maybe I'm going a little bit too businessy or marketing in my thought, but no,
not at all, dude. I think the fact that we've 352 episodes in, reviewing something every episode in some way, I think it's fair for you to say, as a fan of comic book content and animated content, when you watch this episode, as a fan of comic book storytelling, this was a little slower. Nice. And it's true. When I think about it, if I take myself out of the fact that I know where the story's going, and Dr. Evil is petting his cat, talking to us now. I think I understand. I definitely understand what you mean, and I can see it. And I don't think you're wrong. When you're done, I'm gonna jump on Gen V, because that's another.
Yeah, no, I was just gonna say, like, we should move on to the next. But like, again, like, it was entertaining,
right?
But just out of place. And at the same time, I was like, oh, like, I am curious how this will go down, right. But I also thought, I was like, This was a really long setup just to tell me that this, like,
yeah,
I knew right away. I'm like, either he's going to solve everything or he's going to become a bad guy. Why do I need a whole,
yeah,
like, you know,
yeah. Hmm. Yeah. And
the that, budget's coming back in another episode. That's why right. You need a bottle episode. You need to conserve that budget for whatever is coming up next.
And it's funny because I think Seth and Evan's production team that likes to make superhero content, I think they usually do really solid work. But I think we're both on the, like, I don't necessarily feel the same about Invincible only because, again, because I've read the comic, I have certain expectations. But Gen V, for example, I'm of similar mind as you when you talk about Invincible. It wasn't the best finale. The season was so solid, and for that to be the finale felt very disappointing to me. For those of you who haven't watched Gen V, you know, still watch it. But the way they ended that left me a little disappointed. I think we've been saying for a while that, you know, MCU is great, but connecting everything and anything sometimes leaves you a little stretched, as we've seen with the MCU. And when I watched paralyzed,
well, because sometimes you're restricted, right? Because of that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. Yeah. You're stuck. And, you know, I think one of the shows that we made reference to that kind of had the bet within the MCU that did it really well was Moon Knight, where Moon Knight doesn't have any major connections to MCU, but was really entertaining and just happens to take place in the same universe. And I'm okay with that. And Gen V, for me, I wanted Gen V to be a show that took place in the Boys universe. And instead, I feel like I'm getting this thing now where it's going to be Boys season one. Gen V season one, Boys season four, Gen V season two, Boys season five. And I don't like that. I don't want to have to watch the Boys to understand Gen V and vice versa. I think Gen V was standing on its own very well. And I think the way they ended it, if you guys have seen that ending, left me unimpressed. I was actually genuinely really annoyed with it at the end.
That's annoying. That's like Marvel comics as opposed to Marvel movies.
Right.
Because Marvel comic books, like, you know, they always have this like, hey, there's this great story and now you need to buy 20 books and all the books associated with those books to understand any of it.
And
we're telling you stories is a business. Right. It's a business. What are you talking about?
And that's
the thing. You're pushing paper. Nobody buying paper. You got to buy all this paper.
And that's the thing. I get what Marvel Comics is doing, but when it comes to a TV show, you don't have to do that. I like the TV show. I'm already paying for Prime. Why are you making it that I have to watch this to watch that to watch this? Guys, what? Like, Homelander's cameo, great. But what happens after his cameo? What the? My partner and I were both watching the episode. Homelander showed up, says some lines, and then something happens, and then it just skips to the end. And we're like, did Prime just skip? Like, did something happen? Did we press something? Did I sit on the remote? Did you sit on? Nope. That was just what happened. And we're just like, come on.
In movies or TV show, when they have those awkward cuts that you're like, like, you genuinely think for a second, like, it almost feels like you got like hit in the head and you're like, whoa, I just woke up. Where am I? I hate that.
Big facts.
I hate that.
2009, flash forward, John Cho, Joseph Fiennes, weird show. But the whole premise of that show is the entire world skips ahead 7 minutes and they all wake up and they're like, what the fuck? That's how I felt. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was in an episode of Flash Forward, a 2009 ABC show that got canceled after one season. Where am I? What's happening? Why did that scene end so abruptly? Now we're in a white room. Who is this? Who are you? Why am I doing this? All right. And now I have to. And the thing that hurts the most with this situation, writer strike, actor strike. We are not getting The Boys season four for months. They haven't started filming it. I don't even know if it's written yet. So we're not going to get it for months. The post-production on that show is crazy. You see every time Homelander flies, shoots lasers. They have like 30 suits in that show in every other scene. You know how much money that costs to make? Like,
No.
Buku bucks.
Buku bucks. Big facts.
Buku bucks.
So, like, I'm very concerned about what that's going to mean for us as fans, because Gen V ends and now the boys is going to be late 2024.
Well, I feel like a year from now is when we're like, I feel there's going to, it's like having a recession. We're having a recession now of content. And of a year from now, it's going to be like so overload. And watch, we'll end up complaining that there's too much out there.
Right.
But it's because, like, they're, it's, to a certain degree, they're doing it perfect example, Hero Season 2. Instead of going for it, you're like, no, we're going to stop because the last time we went with it, it sucked.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of companies are doing that because, like, we don't want to ruin or take a chance to ruin a property for one season or for one movie just so that we get content out, as opposed to being like, you know, I don't think they want to take that risk because there were so many
shows
and movies got ruined that way.
I also don't even like, I guess I have to look at the timeline for the original strike, but that strike hit like in the middle of the production of stuff. And this time, even though the negotiations happened at the same time, this one didn't end up affecting production. Most stuff had wrapped by the time the writers and the actor strike had started. Mm-hmm. So that's what's different this time. Also different this time, I should say, not just... But one of the big things that people are saying in Hollywood, the same way that in 2007, 2008 strike led to a really big jump in reality TV, the after effect of this strike specifically is going to be a huge decrease in the amount of shows that are made per year. And I think we've even said on this podcast a couple years ago, they were at a point where they're making 500 new scripted TV shows in a year. That's just too many, guys. So, you know, we're going to see that. I think we're going to see that drop to at least 200. Like, there's no, I don't think we're going to get more than 200 new scripted shows.
So we'll see, but again, like, who knows? That sucks, because like, if that were to be true, then the strike is literally like, you might be getting what you want, but you're not getting what you want because now people don't have the job to do, right? Yeah. So,
and people have been saying that, like, a lot of people were saying, I hope people realize that at the end of this strike, you might get everything you asked for, but by asking for that, the studios can no longer produce as much. So all of you who are working on shows are now going to be fighting for jobs, and there's not going to be as many jobs. Some of you are just going to have to leave Hollywood. You're not going to be able to survive in this game anymore. And I think that's what we're going to see. Netflix really messed it up for people. And not to blame only Netflix, but Netflix creating this super competitive system where they were offering writers like full season runs off of like to just outbid all the other studios. Like, instead of a pilot, the old pilot system, they were just like, no, like, we'll take the full season right off rip. We'll give you 10 episodes. And people were just like, what? Okay. Yeah, of course. I'll take that deal. And
why wouldn't you?
Wouldn't you?
Exactly.
I mean, I don't know anyone who's a writer who wouldn't want to make the full vision of their thing and not just roll the dice on a pilot that gets watched and people don't like it, reworked, people still don't like it. Okay, we're shelving your project. And then that dream that you had and that story that you wrote, that you sold to these people, now sits on a shelf and you never get to create it again. Mm-hmm. That's one of the saddest ideas. So, I don't know. It's crazy. I see you put down Loki. How are you feeling this season?
Are you guys watch? Did you guys watch this one as well?
I did.
Okay, so I'm gonna say this out loud. The first like episode, I was like, I feel like, again, I felt a little bit like a wash because I'm like, this was a lot of like, it was more like it was, this could have been, this felt like 10 minutes when you dragged it to 30, whatever, it was fine.
Right.
Second episode built up. Third episode, you're like, okay, well, this is going really far. The fourth episode, halfway through, I'm like, I don't understand. Because, like, this is, like, it feels like it's the end, but this is the fourth episode, but whatever. And then when it ends, and you're like, well, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You have, like, that, like, moment. And then this latest episode, within, like, 5 minutes, I was like, okay, I know what's happening, but this is actually making a lot of sense overall of his whole journey and everything that was happening to him in the first episode. And I was there, I'm like, all right. I fucks with this. I like it a lot. I like it a lot. I'm liking this. I was literally surprised that they were going through the whole everyone blurring in this episode. Like, they danced like a lot of lines in even this episode where you're like, right. How are you getting out of this fucking scenario?
Yeah, yeah.
But like,
I mean, you had moments where people are standing in the middle of worlds that have collapsed.
Yeah, and you're like, how the hell does that even work? But
yeah.
Overall, like, really, I thought it was a very strong episode.
Okay. I mean, good. I'm happy because I was telling my partner, I don't know where I stand on these episodes. I don't necessarily love this season as much as I love the first, which I guess is expected.
I would agree with that statement.
Yeah. I think that the standard hero trope of season one is the hero getting their powers, season two is the hero losing their powers, or movie two is the hero losing their powers. So, you know, we kind of have a world where season one is Loki, which kind of stays on par. And then season two is Loki being lost. So that's their equivalent to the whole him losing his powers,
mm-hmm.
if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt like, oh, I was kind of hoping for something different than the trope, like standard thing of like, this is the world in which he's not as in control as he could be because of, I don't know, anxiety or whatever. Like, Spider-Man can't stick to walls. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Right. But then, yeah, the last episode, though, I agree with you. Really strong. That was definitely like Ki Huy Quan, right? I think is how you say his name. Ki from Raiders and Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, yeah, I think that's how you say his name. Well, I don't go to me, but I believe that's how you say his name.
I know his first name is Key. I just always feel like I'm saying his last name wrong. But, dude, he is fantastic. Like, he's so good in the show. When Loki comes to him and it's just like, this is what's going on. He's just like, I fully believe you. Let's go. It's like, yes. Or like, we need to figure out how to make these pads. Here's the, okay. Wow, that was fast. It's been 18 months. My wife, like, the lines, the delivery is so good.
But it's funny because you know what's weird and what might ultimately, I think, be kind of what's happening a bit?
Are you going to say what I was going to say?
It's like an origin story.
Yeah.
For him and like how this is going. So I'm like, the only thing that doesn't make sense is why would he who remains have all his faces everywhere? But when you're looking at it, you're like, well, this really seems to be how Obi, like, it's the only way how he could explain such a character. And it's also the only way you could explain Mobius. Because Mobius always was obsessed about this, the Sidus, and when the second, I was like skeptical about my judgment on this, but the second he's like, I could bring you back here at any point in time for your kids. I'm like, well, this is actually Mobius's story. It has to be. Because how on earth is Mobius, how Mobius is this whole time, unless this is, or at least this is his arrangement, which is the exact reason why he's like, no, I never looked at my past because you never not knew your past.
Are you ready for my theory?
Go for it.
Oh boy.
First things first, do you know the mythology of Norse mythology, Ragnarok?
To a certain degree.
So the simplest version, Ragnarok is a cyclical event. Mm-hmm. It ends and it starts again, right?
Yeah.
We got Ragnarok the movie. The movie didn't do the thing, the story of Ragnarok. It was just called Ragnarok. They just named it that because it sounded cool.
Yeah,
I feel like Loki is, and also in the mythology, Loki himself is one of the instigators of Ragnarok. I think what we are watching is the story of Ragnarok told through the TVA. Meaning, Loki is Loki. By the way, Obi, did you hear what his whole name is?
I remember hearing it, but I don't recall what it meant.
His name is Oberus, which is the snake that eats its own tail.
I thought it was Ouroboros. I thought Ouroboros. That's how you pronounce it, but sorry. I could be wrong. Listen to me on pronunciation.
No, you are right. I forgot. It is Ouroboros. Thank you. So his full name is Ouroboros, not just Obi, meaning he is the snake. And we find out that he gets the book and he wrote the book, and he gave the book to the kid who grows up into an adult who gives him back the book that he doesn't know he wrote.
Yeah.
That is a cyclical eating of its own tail.
Yeah.
Then he starts to create all the things. Then we also have Timely, who, as he's trying to save everything, goes out and through the radiation gets split up immediately, which, it to me, that was the creation of Kang. We witnessed the moment Kang gets created. Kang is a person who gets sucked into the loom.
Oh, and that's how
he gets turned into Kang, which then leads to the multiversal war, which then leads to the end of the multiversal war, where He Who Remains starts the sacred timeline and starts the TVA.
So basically, this is going, if this sets out the series of events, that's how Marvel was planning to do, more or less. This would influence the Marvel movies because you'd have to do this, all of that. So essentially,
if all the
season one of Loki is technically the end, the true end future of what we're witnessing now in
the
TV, in the movies and stuff.
Right. Loki,
which would be a snake eating its own tail nonetheless.
Right. Loki season one.
I'd be really
one,
smart if that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And one of my coworkers was even just like, so then they could do whatever they wanted afterwards because they could restart the universe with a whatever version. I was like, yes, you could restart the universe and the timelines and do whatever version of the MCU you wanted to do. And you would have properly ended the first one.
Because then you could even take yourself out. You could like take yourself out of the ultimate world and put yourself in 616.
Exactly.
Which then could also technically explain mutants.
Exactly.
Without even having to do any work.
I was just going to say, you do all of this stuff. Loki season one ends with He Who Remains ending. And He Who Remains even says to you, I don't know what happens past this point. Because everything until that point was something that was written that he knew happened. Because he's already lived it. And the parts that he doesn't know is everything that happens from the moment he dies until the moment he's reborn. Because he hasn't started writing it. He doesn't know any of that stuff. Jeez. So that's what that section would be. The section we're seeing now is a section he doesn't know. Yeah. This is my theory.
It wouldn't be bad.
It would make sense based on what they're using. Loki is Norse mythology. Ouroboros is the snake that eats his own tail. It's part of Ragnarok. All the pieces are there.
It would be smart if at the end game of that, because they restart everything, not only do you go to 616 because you want to get all the mutants and stuff and make it easy that way and get away from the Ultimates, but by doing that as well, if you so choose to go back to the Avengers, you can now easily recast and revive any character.
100%. You already introduced variants. You already introduced the timeline can change. You could bring back an Iron Man. You could bring back a Black Panther. You could bring back. You could do all of that. You don't have to do it that in that way. You could do it differently. You could introduce mutants. You could, however you want to do it, you would have a cleaner slate than what you have now.
And it's funny because if you did that, you wouldn't have to do any origin stories because everyone. You'd be like, you want to know the basic concept of their origin story? You could watch phase one.
Right. I don't have to retell you Thor. I don't have to retell you Captain America. I don't have to retell you Iron Man.
You don't have to make Batman. You don't have to do the Batman syndrome.
Exactly. You don't have to do any of them. You don't have to do anyone all the way up until
Spider-Man.
Because you've done all their stories.
Well, actually, they would probably do Spider-Man just because technically Spider-Man already skipped. Right,
I mean,
because you don't need to, but I'm saying that would be the one that you, if you wanted to, you could, because hypothetically speaking, in the Marvel universe, you didn't see that. You saw it in the Sony versus movies before, but even that, it's not like, you know what I mean.
Funny enough, he doesn't even have an Uncle Ben. That's the crazy part.
Oh yeah,
this Peter Parker doesn't have an Uncle Ben. When people have asked him about his Uncle Ben, he doesn't know. In the Far From Home. He does not Far From Home, No Way Home. He doesn't have an Uncle Ben,
maybe Uncle Ben died before he even got there.
Yeah, but he would then at least know of his Uncle Ben.
Because the movie implies there was somebody named Ben. Like all the stuff he's holding, all the little stuff that's around the house, like the suitcase he uses, it says Ben's name on it and stuff.
In the Holland films?
Yeah, in the Holland films, yeah.
Oh, so okay. It's so the person Ben exists.
So he must.
It's not someone he's actually attached to.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. My bad.
It's, I thought he, like, didn't even he was either too young or, like, you know, his parents went. Whatever reason why his parents are there, and by the time he was with Aunt May, it's just, that event already happened.
Yeah. Damn. So basically, Aunt May. Well, spoiler. Wow. That's who becomes his. Uncle Ben. That's the person that he loses, and he's like, he has that crisis.
I would say her and Iron Man are his, like, combined Uncle Ben.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Or maybe more to your point. She's his Uncle Ben, and Iron Man's like the Gwen Stacy thing.
Mm.
He loses. Yeah, because Uncle Ben dying is the reason Spider-Man becomes a hero. Or maybe vice versa for Iron Man and Aunt May. In the comic book, Uncle Ben is the reason Spider-Man realizes you have to take responsibility. If you have, with great power comes great responsibility, that classic line. But Gwen Stacy dying was what made him a hero, is what they say. That's how they frame it. It's like he was just a guy who knew he had power, so he should do something. But when Gwen died is when he was just like, I need to step this up. I can't just, it's not just responsibility. I need to actually try and make this a better world. And I feel like Aunt May and Tony dying were both indications for him to be better and do better. But all this to say, I'm interested in seeing what the MCU does. I still think Feige should go. I said this. I know. I said this last week. Kevin Feige is not a personal vendetta. I also think Lorne Michaels should leave SNL. I also think Greg Berlanti should not be producing as many shows. I also think Shonda Rhimes shouldn't run every show. Like, I'm of the mindset that one person, Chuck Lorre, is the other one. Like, I'm not for one person just being production machines. Even if they are giving opportunities to people, I think you eventually need someone with a different vision after a while. And Feige has been doing this since 2008. Yeah. And
many movies. Like, not just 2008, but, like, you know, like, you're talking about 20 plus movies at this point. Like,
right. I don't want us to get to 2028 and Kevin Feige is still there. And that's in 5 years. And 5 years is not long when it comes to the grand scheme of Marvel and these films they're making. Because if you told me in 2015, by 2020, we would have Endgame and that whole Captain Marvel and all that is done, I would have been like, holy shit, that's a lot of stuff to get through. But they did it. So now we're at 2023. 2024 starts in like 6 weeks, 7 weeks from now.
Why are you telling us this?
Sorry, but I'm just saying timeline-wise, we're already in 2024 in 7 weeks. Mm-hmm. His movies are on the back burners because of a whole bunch of production stuff, actor strikes, writer strikes. So by the time he gets the machine up and running and everything into production again, we're looking at the end of 2024, the beginning of 2025. That's only 3 years away from 2028. I don't want to hear Feige still in charge of Marvel in 2028. 20 years is too long.
He might be the new Bob Iger of the.
Sure. Promote him to the head of Disney and put someone else in charge over there.
No, but I'm saying he's not for Marvel, though, right? Like,
but I mean, he still answers to Bob. I'm saying if you guys like Feige that much, and I know some people do, I'm not saying Feige can't be a boss. Make him take over Disney. He seems to have a good track record. He looks like he knows what he's doing. He has the respect of the fans. He has the respect of the people he's worked with. I have yet to hear anyone in the industry say Feige's a monster, Feige's a this, Feige's a that. It's only positive, you know, like, other than the little Scarlett Johansson thing. But even then, I don't think Feige was the bad guy. It sounded like it was Chapek, the head of Disney, who was the bad guy in that story. So if you guys say he's great and Disney needs a new leader and Iger, for God's sake, needs to leave too, let Feige take that chair. Put someone else in Marvel. Also, Kathleen Kennedy, I love you, but you've been doing it for too long too. Move you out. Put someone else in that spot too. But for God's sakes, man, stop with running Marvel. Let someone else have the vision, because I don't give me 20 years of one person. That's insane. Insane. That's crazy to me. 20 years running a studio?
Some people say if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
But it is broke. And that's what I'm happy you said. It is broke.
With your coffee mug.
Dave, tell me it's not broke. Tell me it's not broke now.
No, no, it's quite the cookie cutter.
If it's not broken, the glass is breaking.
It's cracking a smidge.
It's cracking. And if glass cracks, you could pay someone a lot of money to try and fix the crack, or you replace the whole glass. Replace the whole windshield.
Well, you know, all it is the one right hit, right? So it's either going to hit and shatter, or it's going to hit and somehow fix itself.
What's his next projects? What are the next things from Marvel that we're expecting?
His next project, if I had to say what my next project would be, my next project for him would be retirement. Fuck that. I have enough money.
Right, right. Bye-bye. No, no, no. That's fair. But like,
that's me, though. I'm a lazy person.
I'm shocked when these people do these jobs for 20 years. Like, you granted, retire. Why have you been doing this for that long? Mm. Can you imagine the stress of trying to keep everything in line for Marvel?
He's
for
bald, right?
Story? That should be a title. Kevin Feige, he's bald, right? But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see where it goes. We did this last week. I'll try not to mess it up, but we're going into it. Dave, you weren't here. Oh yeah, Skinny wasn't here either, which is unfortunate. But I know you guys are excited that we have Jaws. You think I'll mess it up again?
I don't know. We'll see.
Right now. I've missed that sound. I genuinely missed that sound.
Geek news and rumors. The only thing we have this week in the news, one of the major things in the news, development of a live action Legend of Zelda to begin. Nintendo has announced that they're finally working on it. I've been told by everyone I know who's ever played the game that this has been something you guys as fans have wanted forever. Oh, Jaws, no? Really?
See, I don't know.
Interesting. Because everyone else I talked to said, finally, you guys, your reaction is like, why? Please, do tell.
It's not why. It's just that here's the thing. With the exception of the cartoon show where he used to be, excuse me, princess.
Oh yeah,
Link's never talked, and there's a mystique about playing the character because the voice that anyone uses right. in their head, and they like not only does he not talk, right? Okay. Like you don't hear his voice,
right?
But you also don't even know how he talks because you don't have dialogue to
Very
read.
Interesting point. You're saying our own imagination of him is
a driving force. It's an attraction to the game, right? It's a way how I find you're a bit more connected to the character.
Yes.
You know? Because it's beyond just, am I name? Like, you know, because at one point in time, I think you were able to name Link before it was like, no, officially this is what it is.
Yeah, really? You just put in, you would put in whatever name and the amount of player, like, you know, this guy's doing a playthrough and it's like, ass clap cheeks.
Yeah.
I can try force of power, you know.
Right. Oh god.
Exactly. Ridiculousness.
Now it's like, name. You know, your Link, you don't get to change the name or anything like that. They keep that, but like you never have this, right? So the only thing that's my hesitation is like how do you even determine what's a good Link script or writing when you don't have anything to base it on? And I find that's actually a lot of pressure for whoever is writing it because like technically everyone's imagination of how Link talks has to be different because it's also never been a conversation of like, well, how does he interact? People are like, no, that's just what it is, you know? So it's going to be interesting.
And then also the running jokes is if you watch any animated thing online is always like, hey Link, how you doing?
Hey.
Yeah. Okay. So what did you do yesterday? Huh? So his exclamations of when he's yelling.
Yeah.
How people kind of interpret how he talks. And then I think in our conversation before, in our chat that we have, I mentioned like they already did a Legend of Zelda movie. It's called Legend. And Ridley Scott, I think it was either Ridley or Tony Scott, one of the Scott brothers, made that movie. And that was like one of the first big movies Tom Cruise did.
Yeah.
And what's his name?
That's a Legend of Zelda movie?
No,
it's not a Legend of Zelda
when
movie.
When you watch
it, interpret
it
as such.
Sorry. You were both talking at the same time. Oh. I didn't hear it.
Go, Dave. Go ahead.
No, no, no. You go. You had a better
I was saying, like, you can interpret that movie as being a Legend of Zelda movie. So I think Legend of Zelda and Legend came out in the 80s. Both came out roughly in the 80s.
Okay.
Legend of Zelda is more like Miyamoto, the creator of Mario. Miyamoto was like, oh, you know, I want to put in a game. I want to make a game where it makes it feels like you're exploring your backyard or the forests or something. So you're just, the whole point is the exploration. You're going here, you're going there, you're finding secrets and stuff. But then this movie called Legend comes out, and you know, this warrior or this kid is trying to save this princess. He finds a sword and he goes to fight the Dark One. Mm-hmm. And you know, he has these big horns and stuff. And it kind of feels like as the graphics got better, it kind of played with that vibe and that look. And you especially see it with Ocarina of Time specifically, where Ganon has big, like, ends up becoming a big giant monster. He has big horns and he looks like what's Tim Curry, the actor that plays the Dark One.
Tim Curry.
Yes. So Tim Curry plays the Dark One or the Darkness or what have you. And he's not Satan. He's not the devil.
Right.
He's just darkness.
And he wants to kill the last unicorn. He wants to destroy the last unicorn because that's like that's the only thing that has.
I remember this now.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
It's, not, it's the famous internet good meme. Movie. Well, for the time.
The famous internet meme with the darkness standing and his chest is out and it's like, would you like some devil?
Well, Ryan Reynolds did an app, some like relationship app or something. They had jokes where he was dressed up as the darkness in it and doing dating games or dating matches or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Guys, this is hot off the presses. This literally happened while we were doing the podcast 37 minutes ago. This is a little crazy. I am happy to be able to announce, after a grueling 118 days on strike, the actors are officially back as of 12:01 tonight, or I guess 12:01 Thursday morning. The strike is over. Actors will be allowed to go back to work. The SAG-AFTRA TV Theatrical Committee approved the agreement in an unanimous vote on Wednesday. SAG-AFTRA announced the strike will end at 12:01 Thursday. On Friday, the deal will go to the union's national board for approval. The Performers Union announced a provisional agreement Wednesday after about 2 weeks of renewed negotiations. The development came not long after a deadline of 5 p.m. that the AMPTP had set for the union to give their answer on whether they had a deal. So a lot of people were worried it wasn't going to happen because AFTRA was taking really long at looking at this last offer from the AMPTP. For those of you who still don't know, AMPTP is the group of all the studios, you know, Netflix, Sony, all those guys. They're part of the AMPTP, and they work with SAG-AFTRA, Yahtzee, WGA, all those different unions. They're the ones that represent the studios, and all those different unions make deals with them for productions in Hollywood. So yeah, the strike is over, which is crazy. 118 historic. Days. Yeah, historic. You know, I really am looking forward to seeing what they got, because from what I understand, the studios were really trying to stick with the AI stuff. There's a lot of stuff that the studios wanted to be able to control, you know, like people's likeness in perpetuity for background and stuff. They were really trying to stick on that because I'll say this very quickly. I'm of two minds. I understand the idea from the studio's perspective, because production costs for me to have someone just be AI'd into a scene in the background when I have the scene to redo it, as opposed to hiring an entire crew of stand-ins to come back and do 1 day of reshoots, 2 day of reshoots, is costly. But at the same time, that's the business.
Yeah.
You should be willing to pay stand-in actors to do the job if they need background people for the scenes you're talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as I understand you wanting to save money, I get it. I 100% understand. You're trying to look for ways to save money. But you can't just own people's likeness in perpetuity to use. And also,
Ever and ever.
And
the guy that wrote the Pendant deal is dead for 100 years, but you still making money off of people that are dead for 200 years.
And the way the rules got changed, because at one point the rules before DVDs like didn't include DVDs.
Right.
So when they redid those contracts, they made it that it was like in the universe, some of the contracts say.
Yeah.
Some of those contracts say throughout the universe in perpetuity, because they're just like, we're covering all our bases. So, yeah. You know, SAG-AFTRA is not going to let you cut these, you know, younger actors, all these background actors and all these people who are part of that union deserve to be paid for the work they do and deserve to be paid every time you use their image and their likeness. So, you know, that's one of the sticking points that was a problem. And I look forward to seeing where it all landed, because this is huge. This is a pretty big deal. I'm really worried about them trying to rush stuff before American Thanksgiving, because that is usually when things shut down. So that would mean
I don't see them doing that. I think it's
If the writers have been writing scripts for stuff and they try and film anything between now and the 23rd, that's really tight. And I also feel like the actors are going to need a beat, like oh shit, we're going back to work. Okay. It's kind of overwhelming. So, but you know, maybe we'll see. This is kind of crazy. But for all, like I was saying, I said it just moments ago, guys, I guess we might get The Boys earlier than I was thinking. Cause if
we'll see. You got to figure that out.
Hopefully it'll be better for everyone in the sense of like people getting paid equally and, you know, getting content out there at the same time, not risking too many jobs for people, because it's already a tough enough world out there now.
Yeah, agreed. Boys, that's the whole show. We done did another one. 352. It always a blast. Anything you guys want to tell the people?
Check out TF Slag and Aaron Archer on YouTube. Armada.
Yeah, hit it, folks. We'll be back with another one. Don't forget Chop Vision on Free X Agents Media. Don't forget Running with Wolves on CKUT 90.3 in Montreal, or online on TuneIn app, or you can watch it on YouTube. The episodes are up on YouTube. You guys can check out all that content. We will be back with another one next week. And yeah, man, I don't even want to. Do I want to say it? Nah, I won't say it. It's not the holiday season yet. I almost wanted to say happy, but I won't do it to you guys. I've been listening to Christmas music since
August. Mean, we're allowed to. We're Canadian.
True. Yeah, it's the Americans who aren't. Oh, but you know what? I will say, because it's going to happen this weekend, Remembrance Day. Take a moment this weekend on November 11th and remember those who have fallen for our rights to do stuff like this, that the freedom to express ourselves in the way we want. Guys, that's the whole show. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. Peace, everybody.
Peace.